All right, y'all, it's spring, and you know what that means. It's time to start planning our summer festival traveling. Yep, it's time to get into my Airbnb bag cross-country, a.k.a. Time to visit my homes all across the country. And you know what I never think about? Why not list my own spot on Airbnb and host some folks at my house? I mean, my house is cute. Yes, let's make money while we're spending money. Just trying to help you out, man, because your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. This classic episode was produced by the team at Pandora. Ladies and gentlemen, this is QLS Classic from May 17th, 2017. We talked to our old pal Nelly Furtado about our Portuguese-Canadian roots and her work with Timbaland and the ups and downs of juggling a career, motherhood, squashing beef, and normalcy. We hope you enjoy this episode of Questlove Supreme with Nelly Furtado.
Here we go.
Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
The $20 challenge.
Yeah.
Were you Supreme fam nerds?
Yeah.
Whose opening bars don't rhyme woe, promiscuous, or bird?
Roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema. I got your roll call.
My name is Fonte.
Yeah.
On this instrumental.
Yeah.
My whole family with jam.
Yeah.
To Nelly on Dance Central.
Roll call.
Okay.
Suprema. Suprema. Roll call. Suprema. Suprema. Roll call.
My name is Sugar.
Yeah.
Say it right.
Yeah.
Nelly Furtado.
Yeah.
Turn off the light.
Roll call. Suprema. Suprema. Suprema roll call. Suprema,
I'm unpaid bill.
Yeah.
Can't take no more.
Yeah.
Guess I'll go knock.
Yeah.
On 100 doors.
Roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call.
Boss Bill's my nombre.
Yeah.
For goodness sakes.
Yeah.
Canada's not only.
Yeah.
That young boy Drake.
Roll call. Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
I'm Laia.
Yeah.
World's number one fan.
Yeah.
Nelly Furtado's here.
Yeah.
Obrigada, man.
Roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
Nelly.
Yeah.
That's who I am.
Yeah.
Excited to rock with Quest again, cause he's my jam.
Roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call.
Wow.
Hey,
So I owe 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I owe $100.
Hey.
Wait a minute. No, because Lightyear, you said whoa.
Whoa's number one fan. I didn't rhyme it with whoa, though.
Ooh. Whoa. Shots fired.
Bam.
Wait, you saying that? That deserves the black guy thinking pointing to his temple. That's what that belongs to. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another. A new edition of Questlove Supreme. I'm Questlove. This is Team Supreme. Say what's up, y'all.
What's up, Supreme? Yay. Reloaded.
Yes. 2.0 Questlove Supreme. Our guest with us today, she is a breath of fresh air, I shall say. I've been a longtime admirer of this, I'll say, songbird for her voice, her music, her artistry. She came out the gate in 2000 as a solo artist with her debut, Whoa Nelly. It kind of captured our hearts and our minds and our ears with hits like Turn Off the Light, Shit on the Radio, and I said
yeah.
it. I didn't say ellipses on the radio. And of course, Like a Bird, she won multiple Juno Awards, Grammy Awards. Not stopping there, she collaborated with megastar acts like NERD, Missy Elliott.
And The Roots.
Yeah.
On Sacrifice.
Uh-huh. I forgot that she collaborated on my own song, Fonte. Thank you. I appreciate that. There's also Nas, Jurassic 5, Swollen Members, Chaos, K&N, it just goes on and on. Paul Oakenfield, Tiesto. Probably her most important collaboration was in 2006 with her her third album, which is Loose, with Timbaland. And she didn't
which
stop
sold
there.
Sold a lot of copies.
Yeah, 12 million. Lot. Amazing.
A lot. Oh. If I sold 12 million copies, I wouldn't anything.
Even answer Amir's phone
You would
phone
never
calls
see me again.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
I sell 12 million t-shirts and it's over.
She didn't stop there. She released an all Spanish record in 2009 with Mi Plan.
Dead.
Right. I'm not used to Amir the Wikipedia man.
Right?
Right here.
Is this like this, the
is, this is. Well, I'm trying
you're
to convince
Wikipedia.
No, he's
trying
to.
Yo, let him cook.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
This is fantastic.
Now, this is instead of let's start from the beginning.
All right, now, let's start from the beginning. So you were born.
You did.
No, let him cook. This is great. Nelly, you don't understand how much of a change this is. This
really?
Is,
oh,
I thought I was coming in like
no,
prepared.
No, I just said I wasn't used to it. I just say it was
I'm
bad.
I'm appreciating it.
No, this is great.
This is amazing. This is amazing.
Not go near your song.
Anyway, thank you all for interrupting me, guys.
No problem. Yeah. Right, we're here.
Yeah.
Don't
anyway.
Let them bother you, Amir.
Anyone else? Any engineers in the studio? Anywho, she's offering us her sixth studio album entitled Rock.
Oh, he missed a part about my Latin Grammy.
I mentioned that. I mentioned that, but I was rude interruption.
He was
rude
into it.
I'm sorry.
Talk about me some more.
Yes, I covered your whole life.
Thank you. No, that was good. Like, that was good.
I'm not. What's your social security number? Yeah,
it's 555.
Ladies and gentlemen,
fondest childhood memory.
Yes, and she's also heading up the Donald Trump RussiaGate investigations.
Oh shoot! Oh
wow! Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Nelly Furtado.
Thank you. Thanks. That was such a nice intro. My God,
it was my first intro.
It's good to see you again.
It's great to see you too.
What the hell?
Yeah, man. It's
we occasionally send tweets to each other.
Yeah,
we're like, hey.
So you guys are close.
We are. Yes.
I don't know. Close I guess.
We've been.
I've been to Philly. That's legit. I've been there in their old studio.
Oh, the stripper joint. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. What? No, before then. It was like,
what
I read
stripper joint? You've been in that studio forever. Have you ever seen a stripper
pole?
In that studio?
Yes.
I've seen
when
the stripper
we were
pole.
Y'all making for not.
Oh, we were making
that? When y'all was.
Yeah, that was so long ago. That was like in 2001 when we went and worked together in Philly.
2001, working on finale.
And you guys like had the whole thing written already, the chorus. And I was bummed out because I thought I'd get to co-write with you.
Wow.
Maybe and you should have because like, I don't think Sacrifice is built.
I'm like, okay, like this is cool.
Like the look on Fonte and Bill's face right now, like... you should have done that.
It was like really breathy vocals. It was fun though. I liked how, look, I mean, that album's amazing, but like, yeah.
So wait,
I was just happy to be there. It was fine.
You felt like Missy. Like, I ain't gonna be on your record just singing no hooks. That's kind of ill. Like,
well, because I always wrote my own song. So I'd actually, that was the first time someone had like written a thing for me to sing. So I was like, but it's The Roots. So I was like, of course. Like, I'm just happy to be here. I'm going to be on your album. And I sang
get that
it.
Publishing
it was
check.
Fun.
Yeah. Huh? Get that publishing check next time.
Got to be a next
yeah,
time.
Yeah, no, I was going to say that.
I was happy to be here.
There's always the future.
Exactly.
There's always the future.
Exactly, yeah.
You know what? When I first met you, I think the very first time we opened for you, we had walked
Area
in.
Area 1?
No, we did.
We also sang together a bunch on Area 1 tour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But even before Area 1.
I performed live with you a bunch.
There was a show we did together And I know that you came on first and then we came on, but I came in right when you were dancing to BBD's Poison.
What Sorry, an what? Introduction.
Yeah, and I was like, you know. And
had an interlude, yeah, that I did.
In my
90s interlude.
In my head, I already had it pecked out that you were just a pop show on Tuesday that I saw on TRL. And, you know, like a Bird leads you to believe, at least at that time when the single was just out. And we all looked at each other like, wait, who is this on stage? Like, Nelly Furtado is
the same person
doing the BB, like she was doing the dance that they were doing in the
video.
In the video.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
And so it was like, it was a little Nelly moment. Like, we hardly knew you.
I got to know you. LL Cool J and Mary and one other act, Salt and Pepper, on the same little routine. Yeah.
I didn't know.
Yeah. So,
but then you explained to me about your days, even before your solo career with Nail Star and that stuff. So
yeah, there's always so much, right? I mean, you know this, you're an artist. So it's like, there's so much that goes into who you are that people don't see when you make like a product or a packaged thing. And you just roll with it. It's okay, you know? But the people, you know, who end up like digging deeper into maybe what you do or going to see. I make the same mistake today. Like, I judge artists all the time. And then I listen to their catalog and I feel so guilty. Or I see their show, you know, and I'm like, ah, damn, I should never judge an artist until I've actually, like, last night I was listening to the new Drake album because I'm like, well, let me just put this on and listen to it. You know what I mean? So, like, you can't speak on something unless you listen to it, unless you go to the show.
And
like,
then he took you to South
I
Africa.
I feel like, you know what's fair? What'd you say?
He took you to South Africa. Right now, yeah, he's making South Africa house the
No, but, like, honestly, like, I feel like, I really feel like you can't judge an artist until you listen to something, a whole album of one album at least, and you go to their live show or watch like YouTube live clips or something.
But is it fair to listen to the first album? Because sometimes it's not fair always to listen to the first one because you were
Swayed and record company. Yeah, sometimes you have to dig deeper. Yeah, you have to dig a little deeper. I don't know. I mean, but anyway, thanks for talking about that because, I mean.
Well, no, I wanted to know what your beginnings. I said the word. What they were that at least led you to wanting to start a music career.
Oh God.
And well, how did you, you told me that.
I was young. Like there was no Mickey Mouse Club. I was from a small town, Victoria, BC, but there weren't even any talent shows, but I had a church. I had a Portuguese church community. So like I got to sing there. I got to sing at church. At our festivals, we call them festas.
Festas.
At the festa.
Okay.
And were you singing in Portuguese?
And I sang with my mom in Portuguese, okay. And I was 4 years old, and I got up on the stage, and I just knew that I loved it. I just knew that I wanted to be doing that, because I felt like I was spreading joy and love and good vibes, and I felt that at the age of four. It was really kind of weird. But I'd always sing songs. Like, I would make up songs on the spot from when I was, apparently I was two or three.
Oh, okay.
No, around the house. Okay. And my sister would literally be like, sing, make up a song, because my eyes would well up with tears and I'd get super emotional. So it was always inside of me. I did an experiment at MoMA PS1 in the fall. I did an installation where I wrote songs with 100 strangers in the course of 3 hours. And I was trying to explore this connection we have to like the source and why we write songs and why it comes to you and how we can tap into that and prove that it's an empathic thing and prove that like a song can prove how we're all similar rather than different.
Can you back up?
Yeah.
Without me making any Houston 500 references.
Yeah, yeah.
So there are 100 people in the room.
No. Okay, so it was anywhere from like one person. The smallest group was one person. And then the largest group was 10 people and a dog, the last group.
And a dog.
And the MoMA PS1 had this back to school fundraiser. And I'm friends with this performance artist named Ryan McNamara. And he told me I could do anything with the one room. He's like, do you want a room at this thing? And I was like, I do, because I have this idea. I want to do this experiment where I sit with my guitar. And this started in, I used to do songwriting workshops ongoing, this place called Narok, Kenya, and with these girls at this high school called Olaleshwa. So I go there all the time, made a bunch of friends there over the years working with this nonprofit. And what I do is do a songwriting workshop, and we write a song, but it just exists in that moment and then it's over, you know? So I'm very into this idea that a song is just this expression. And because you know as well as I, we don't record everything we write. Right. We just do it to do it. You know what I mean? So I wanted to, in that room, like, okay, so like one person would walk in and sit down. I'd have my guitar. I'd tape it on a tape recorder because I didn't want it to be like this branded moment that was videotaped. I wanted it to exist in that moment. Sure. Yeah. And so they'd come and sit down and I'd be like, okay, what did you dream last night? And they'd tell me about their dream the night before. Or I'd be like, what was your favorite childhood vacation? And then I'd start singing a song and they would contribute sometimes if they had any musical ability or not. And by the end, after 15 minutes, someone would knock on the door when I had 2 minutes left. Then I would record the thing. Then I would wrap the cassette in the paper with all our lyrics. And usually there were different reactions. Some people would cry. There were two people fighting because some people didn't know each other in the groups because everybody was trying to get into the thing and they had to like, some people didn't like each other. But then there was a lot of laughter. And I felt great because sometimes you wonder, like, will your inspiration ever run out? You know what I mean? Will it ever just like end? And then the truth is more. Like the more you share with people, like the more you get.
I'm just trying to figure out the logistics. Like if I'm a fan of Nelly Furtado, like, wouldn't you be freaking out and all that? Like, how do you just calm them down just to get to the point of the experiment?
I think they saw how chill I was. And Ryan had lit the room in this, like, really moody orange light. And it was, like, a back-to-school theme that night at the museum. Mm-hmm. So it was almost like I was a teacher. So you were coming into a classroom. It was maybe just one or two people. Maybe you were with a friend. And so some people... Yeah, maybe I got them in this weird, vulnerable moment where they're like, whoa, this is weird.
You got them in the sunken place.
And why is she so chill and peaceful? And they're probably like, the version of me in that room is nothing like anything they've seen in a video or something. So I'm just like, hey, you know, I start writing. Because, you know, it's a different vibe when you write a song. It's nothing like your stage persona or anything like that. It's a whole other thing. So most people are pretty calm. Some people... I don't know. Some people were songwriters, aspiring songwriters, and they were just enjoying it. They're like, sweet, this is so cool.
Were there any particular moments in that experiment that stood out to you? Like,
these two people were arguing because like the lady didn't like the lyrics that this younger guy was writing because they were kind of goofy. They had like some like Prince Arthur reference or like something crazy or
Canada.
Like, perverted or something.
And then
the lady was all like, I don't like those. Oh. You know what I mean? But we had to agree. So it was like, oh. There were some people who weren't really participating. They were just staring at me. But I was still able.
Yeah, I would have been one of those people.
Right. I know you would have been. You would have been like, show me how you're going to do this if I don't participate. Yeah. But you asked me, and then I wrote this whole statement about it. And the whole point was, since I was little, I never understood where the songs came from. I was like, where is this words coming from? The melodies, blah, 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 the music in my head. I never really understood it. So I just wanted to explore that a little bit more, I guess. But the answer to your question is I eventually moved to Toronto after I graduated high school from Victoria, a very small town. Mm-hmm. And I moved to Toronto and I got immersed in the scene. There was an urban scene that was burgeoning. And so I started a trip hop group with my friend Talis and we called it Nellstar. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of did my thing and I was 17, 18 years old. I missed my parents. I moved back home and went to college for a year in Victoria. I bought a guitar. I started playing at like coffee shops and trying to get my songwriting better. And then... But right before I left, I sang at a talent show called The Honey Jam. I was 18. Mm-hmm. And it was mostly rappers and R&B singers, all female. And then I kind of came up there and did this like weird little trip hop song. And my manager at the time was there and I met him that night and sort of kept in touch and ended up. It was like a Cinderella type thing. It was like, ooh, you're getting flown to New York because they like your demo. I think the reason why was because, do you remember back in the day when people had professional writers write their bio and you got a professional headshot for your photo?
Yeah, press kits and
yeah. All that, yeah. So when you had a demo and you were an artist who wanted a record deal, you like would have a professional photo and a bio. So I said, I don't want that. I want to stand out. So I went to the local like Galleria Mall photo booth, like down the street from my aunt's where I was staying on her sofa bed. And I took strip mall photos of myself. I scanned them at work because I had a job doing customer service at an alarm company. I like snuck into like the room with the scanners and the computer and I made friends with the systems guy who worked there, let me use a computer. And I photocopied my own, like, strip mall photo, like, cool photo.
With the crazy background? Like, did you have, like, the Michael Jackson dance, like...
With the cash in hand.
Coming out of a wart.
Yeah, like, not the Tupac, not the club background, was it? Like
two champagne glasses.
Why, yeah, champagne glasses.
Champagne glasses, yeah, yeah.
No, I had like a dusty like orange curtain behind me or blue, and I just made it look all like trippy. And then I wrote not a bio. I wrote like a weird mantra. Like I just did like a journal entry style bio. And at the time, nobody was doing that.
Yeah, I was like, what made you do that?
I don't know. My manager was cool. He was just like, this is great. This will make you stand out. That's cool that you did this. Write down what you said to me in your office that day, you know, where I said some super like megalomaniacal stuff. Like, I want to be Gandhi and Mother Teresa, like, you know, that ambition, that burning, like, get me out of my circumstance ambition. And you're just like, I wrote this bio myself. I wrote some crazy, like, mantra journal entry style bio. And people were like, who's this girl? We want to meet her. And I had a demo to go with it that was
maybe
also...
I should have done that. No, because the protocol, at least that I learned, is whatever critic pans your album the most.
Yeah.
When it's reviewed.
Yeah.
You get that person
to write the bio.
To write your bio. So that way it's a conflict of interest from them reviewing your album again. Black man pointing me.
Black man pointing it.
Music industry hack.
Yeah. Oh, because the same smart. Ones, the same ones will get you again. Is
well,
what you're
yeah, I mean, like
if they don't like you, they'll continue not
if
to.
If writer blah 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 has written your bio, chances
they can't
are
review your record.
He'll pass at Rolling Stone from giving you another, you know, mundane 3-star writing. But black.
Black man, black woman.
If you can't,
I don't know if we get a black woman.
If you can't
woman,
beat them, hire them.
See, can we just say then that the reviews, all us artists, we're like, we don't care.
No, we
that's
know.
Bullshit.
We
all know.
We
all know that's
so care. It hurts when someone writes a bad review. I think.
But
I
I'm
think,
saying that you're for,
yeah,
I mean, Will Nelly
hard.
was it came out the gate as in, I mean, everyone universally agreed that it was an unusual record. For starters, the thing that impressed me about it the most was, well, as Bill and I were noting before, I realized that your production team was definitely into quote unquote real hip hop. This is when I say real hip hop, it's from the when the old guy, the old hip hop fan says real hip hop. But it is just certain nuances, certain snares used that I realized like, oh, whoever's producing this record really is dipped in the hip hop culture because, but it wasn't done in a way where it exploits it. Like you didn't come out the gate or you weren't marketed as a hip hop artist.
No.
Yet there were a lot.
We let it come to us.
It was probably the most pure, you know, because at least in between like 1998, 99, 2000, you know, people's version of hip. Like hip hop being infused inside the pop music was like, all right, let's get
Steal My Sunshine.
Yeah, let's get the Impeach the President snare.
Oh, man.
Like the theme to Scrubs.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
Or, you know, Alanis Morissette using Impeach the President or George Michael using Funky Drummer.
Funky
like,
Drummer,
that
yeah.
happened?
Wow. Nine
yeah,
times.
On a,
gotta go back and listen.
On the Listen Without Prejudice album.
Yeah, it's just like, okay. I like, you know, let me just put this loop there. But your people were using like some obscure shit. And using it the right way, that real hip hop heads were like, okay. Yeah. She just isn't the average oh god.
The culture vulture.
Yeah, like you're yeah, like you're coming on some real shit. So what was the process like doing the first record?
I'm glad you asked me that. So we started with a demo and we did it in Brian West's like attic studio. Three of us, me, Gerald, Eaton, and Brian West, they were a part of a R&B group called the Philosopher Kings. Kind of like what used to be called acid jazz, pop, like that kind of band. Mm-hmm. They were really good live and really talented musicians. They've all gone on to have their own production and writing careers. But anyway, I got two of them. I got Brian West and Gerald Eaton, who was a singer in the band. That was really key because Gerald Eaton was such a good singer that he really knew how to vocal arrange me. He really knew how to like make sure that the vocals were interesting and make sure that my harmonies were interesting on the album.
Because there's a lot of ideas floating around.
Yeah, and the three of us, we co-produced the album together. We actually worked as a team, and we I actually programmed like the bass line on Turn Off a Light. Like I just like actually played it on the keyboard. Okay. And Shit on the Radio I wrote on guitar. I played the guitar on the record. And I think that the three of us were so invested in just having fun, you know. Pro Tools had just been invented, so the actual process was interesting. We were working in this really cold, it had no heating, this like studio place in Toronto, in a warehouse building, and Pro Tools kept crashing because Brian didn't fully know how to use it yet, and it was bugging out.
Mm-hmm. Still happens.
So in the long spells of time... Yeah.
No, Steve's looking at me like
still yeah. crashes all the time. Familiar.
No, it still crashes all the time. But like, just imagine like when it first like
literally.
No.
But you know, like when it first came out, there were like a lot of glitches, and like he happens. Was trying to merge the he was trying to merge the MIDI with it, all the sounds, and that was causing problems for us. And so I just like take naps and stuff. So I'd wake up and Gerald would be like, your voice sounds so cool right now. You got to sing the vocal for this song right now. And it'd be 3 a.m. I'd be like, really? He'd be like, yeah. And I'd sing this like hook or whatever. The other thing we were doing was we were going to the record store a lot. We were going to our friend Aki's store called Cosmos mm-hmm. in Toronto. You been to that one? It's the best. You should go. Anyway, so we would go there and get a lot of Brazilian music and stuff like that and just kind of listen and get inspired. You know, everything from Milton Nascimento to like Martinho da Vila or whatever, and we would sample it and kind of create things that way.
Right.
And vocally too, I had experimented with a lot of things in Nellstar that I kind of like ended up kind of bringing that.
Why not?
Kind of like that sort of scat-like singing, you know, that kind of sing rap. Type right. of flow when you start and delivery. Gigging,
when you do the I don't know what you call it, but you do it. Yeah.
All of that too was very influenced by like Brazilian vocal percussion. But the process was long. So the reason Whoa Nelly, that first record, sounds like that and it sounds like this crazy pastiche is because it was very conscious, the making of it. Like I brought in albums that I love. Like I was really into Corner Shop at the time when wow, I was born, I was for, born the for the seventh time. Yeah. Because they were one of the first groups to really merge pop with like cultural music. Yeah. You know what I mean?
A lot of Indian yeah. influence. Yeah.
Thank you for seeing me on that. Yeah. Fonte. Yeah.
You don't remember Corner Shop? Okay.
Sitars and
yeah. everybody. I listened to it.
Everybody, everybody needs a bosom for a pillow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Writing it down.
But we'd find like street buskers, street musicians in the subway, like playing a vibraphone or a sitar. And we'd be like, can you come to the studio today? Like we had lots of people come play and we'd just sample them. And well, we'd not sample them, like we wouldn't pay them. We'd pay them for their session and then we would use it in different ways. But there's even Brazilian berimbau. There's some quirky instruments on there. So anyway, all that hard work and time and energy and technical difficulties led to the sound of the album.
Technical. So you're saying mistakes?
Yeah, man. Okay. Like Pro Tools crashing, you know, and things like taking longer to like one. There's a song on that album that took 1 month to record. Wow. And I mean, we were in the studio every day experimenting. It's what called song? Trying to Find a Way.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I yeah. left my heart in San Francisco with some the club kids on the crowded street somewhere. That one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So were you, how did you feel about the reception of the record and
the first album?
Yeah,
it was weird because I wanted Shit on the Radio to be the first single. I'm glad it
yeah so how
<it wasn't. laughs>
I was gonna say, how do you even present that idea, like, as I mean, to criticize the radio and to be like, hey, accept me, but I don't think you came out the gate thinking,
no, hey, like, it was weird. You know what it was? It was my friend, like, you know, your friends and then your real friends. So it's like there's always like the peanut gallery who's like too cool for everything. And it's like, oh, I feel like it was a random conversation in a car and somebody said, oh, what are no, you guys no, looking
like,
at each other?
I was like, you mean us?
No,
I mean us as in we are too cool. And we're snobs. And
yeah, but that's cool. You can do that, but not to your friends. So, like, someone in a car.
I ain't got no friends.
No, but, like, Shit on the Radio happened because I was in a car with a friend from back home. It was a group of people. And someone said to me, hey, it was, like, more like an acquaintance. Was like, you signed a record deal. Make sure you don't make cheesy music. Make sure you don't make bad music. Make sure you make cool music. And I was like, excuse me? Yeah, like, that was like, it's like really hating before you even had a chance to do anything. And people just hate just to hate. And so Shit on the Radio was about that. It was like, you know what? I don't need to prove myself to you or anyone. I can just like do what I want to do. And I don't need to worry about shoegazing, you know? And so, yeah. So anyway, so presenting to a record label. Yeah, Mo Austin. I don't know. Do you know Mo Austin?
Yes, we know the legend of Mo Austin.
Yeah, man. Like, he worked at DreamWorks. Like, my label had like Lenny Waronker and Mo Austin and like Robin.
You inherited Warner Brothers guys.
You inherited the Warner Brothers crew.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, they were like the classic. You know, James Taylor. It was like, it was James Taylor.
Taylor Prince.
Yeah. I got real lucky, you know. I had these like amazing, seasoned people behind me, and they believed in everything I did. And Lenny Waronker came to the studio when we were almost done. Whoa, Nelly. And he looked at me and he goes, savor this moment. You will never make music like this again because you're just starting out, and your impression and the way you think and the way you create will never be the same again.
I was going to say that innocence, and you can feel and hear that innocence, like the boundaries of there not being boundaries, you coloring outside the lines and that sort of stuff. You get the sense of that, like, oh, this is a person that's just discovering their body parts, metaphorically speaking, like, you know, like, oh, the limited power I have. And then it's almost like you get tainted, or you know, there's a pressure on your hands when you work up on following material. Like, how did you feel afterwards? Like,
I know exactly what you mean, because I hear that on records when I listen to them now. You know what I mean? So, like, I think I heard Drum's album, and I was like, oh, I love how he doesn't care. And it just seems so, right. You know, like there's an intentional.
And it'll never happen again.
Right. Well, I don't know. Wiser. Like, I was like, oh my God, this is so beautiful because it's so free. You know what I mean? Like, oh, this is so free, you know? But anyway, myself, yeah. Oh my God, are you kidding me? Pressure. Plus, I was a girl. I was like a 21-year-old girl. Like, all of a sudden, like, what? Like, I'm nominated for a Grammy, and like, my mom's sitting next to me, and we're at the Grammys, and I win a Grammy. Like, it was all surreal.
How'd you feel when they announced your name that night? I think I was there that night when you won your.
Yeah, you were probably there. Yeah. Back in the good old days. I mean, it was amazing. It was like.
But you kind of, I mean, you expected to win. I mean, you were unstoppable.
I don't know. Like, it's still cool. Like, it's still, but the funny thing that happens is afterwards, like, I was living in LA for like a year. And I remember you invited me to a party one night, and I couldn't go. And I don't remember why. I couldn't convince my friend to come out with me, and I didn't go.
Right.
My roommate, my friend. But around that time, I remember starting to feel like, oh, I got to deal with all the other ways I actually feel about this business. You know what I mean? The starry eyes are gone. I'm now wondering, does it all come down to wearing a pretty dress on the red carpet? And that really messes with you when you're only 22.
This is before the second album?
Yeah. It was right when I was about to record it.
So you're worrying that you might become the establishment that you were rebelling against.
That's why my first single on Folklore, it's called Powerless, where magically, sign of the times, they asked me to sing it tomorrow on the Today Show. I was like, is this a typo? Do you mean promiscuous?
Right.
Like, do you know what I mean? Like, people want to hear songs like Powerless now, which was kind of like a protest song at the time. The first line says.
I mean, look at the time we're living in, though. I know. It kind of fits now, I think.
I know, but it's amazing to me that music can live on in that way and still inspire people, because the first line says, paint my face in your magazines, make it look whiter than it seems, paint me over with your dreams, shove away my ethnicity, because this life is too short to live it just for you. But if you feel, when you feel so powerless, what are you going to do? Oh, wait, I got to learn lyrics before tomorrow. What are you gonna do? So say what you want.
But is that true, Nelly? Like, really, at some point, somebody, because your ethnicity is a part
album.
Of who your sound. So somebody really came at you in a label type way.
I felt that way in photo shoots. Yeah. I felt like there was an how do I say, anglization?
Anglicization.
Yeah, anglicization on me. I've always had olive skin. You know what I mean? I was aware of that because I grew up in a small town, British colony. I was like the only ethnic kid in my class in kindergarten. So it's all relative. And then And so by the time I was done with my first record and I was doing Powerless, I was like, well, what about who am I really? You know what I mean? Like, what am I really about? And what do I want to say on this next record? So I started talking about The next record, I have a song called like Fresh Off the Boat. You know, my parents are immigrants. Mm-hmm. I was born in Canada. I have a song called Picture Perfect about my dad's like immigrant dream of like coming to Canada and how everything looks so good in the old 70s photographs when you look at it.
Right.
So anyway, yeah, that's what happened. Yeah. Sometimes I would feel like there was a paradigm you needed to fit into at the time.
That didn't
always match how I felt. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yo, what's up? This is Fonte, Fontigolo from Team Supreme. Black representation in media is very important to me. I think it's important to have our stories told by people who look like us and who have shared in our common experiences. Some of my earliest influences were Donnie Simpson. I would also say Tom Joyner, Angela Stribling, Sherry Carter. They were just people who told our stories with a lot of class and dignity and were big inspirations to me. The next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories, Black truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now, they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcast, The Center Black Voices. It's NPR Noir. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR. Wherever you get podcasts.
All right, y'all. You know what season it is. Tis the season for spring breaking and planning our summer travel. And if you're like me, you're already in your Airbnb app trying to find which spot is right for you. Now, listen, while I'm looking to spend all this money, what I'm not doing is thinking about making money with Airbnb. See, you got to change your mind state. Make the money while you're spending the money. How, you say, Laia, do I make the money? Well, you host at your house. And I know what you're thinking. I mean, my whole house? Well, no, you don't have to do your whole house. I mean, you could do a room or, you know, do the whole house. So make some money while you're spending some money this summer. I'm trying to tell you, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I have a theory about folklore, which is, you know how... like Weezer fans will now swear by Pinkerton.
Right.
Like, that's their Pinkerton. I actually think that your folklore could be your Pinkerton moment.
Okay.
Because even though it again, you could tell that you were older, wiser, sort of cynical eyes, even based on the album cover. Because when I copped the record, that's the first thing I noticed. I love the fact that you've always kept your logo the same.
Right.
But based on the album cover, even I was like, oh, Nelly gets serious here. Like, it's...
my tone, my face.
Right. So,
and if you look
closely,
I got a little Nevis in my belly, too. I'm like 4 months, 5 months there.
But I also know that, I mean, what we also have in common is that, both of us got shipped to Geffen.
Oh my God! You were in that crazy turnover.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because
were you on DreamWorks before?
Well, we were on MCA, and when they announced in 2003, like, you know, we're getting rid of the following 11 labels.
That was such a weird feeling.
We all got shipped, and it was like the racial draft.
You. It was traded. Right. The draft or the trade.
I'm like, why is a cooler company buying me?
It was the racial draft of labels.
All the black artists pretty much went over to Geffen, right?
Yeah, but it was a weird really? Process. Like Dr. Dre told, Dr. Dre kind of
about this in your book.
Kind of, you know, told President of
Interscope.
Jimmy?
Yeah, I told Jimmy, like, okay, here are the cool artists. And
wow. What?
Yeah, Dre's my man. He comes through.
Oh, because he picked you, but if not, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's awful then fuck for Dre. The guy, people who didn't get you know what I'm saying?
So I'm just saying that, unfortunately, a lot of notable records got overlooked in the shift of getting to that moment. So, I mean, how did you personally feel when that album sort of got lost in translation as far as the commercial?
It was kind of weird because, like, I felt like because I was, like, kind of playing guitar on more songs and kind of being more, I guess, traditionally what you would see, like, more like a rock aesthetic. I felt like it wasn't accepted because people just wanted me to be that girl with the pigtails and, like, you know, like the fun ethnic girl with hooped earrings bouncing around. It's like, she was so happy. Why is she mad?
Wait, because Get Your Freak On came at what point in the midst
of... Oh, early, like in Mo Nelly times.
Right. So,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
That's how I organically felt, just to be completely honest with you. I felt like, oh, I'm not allowed to be angry? Okay. Like, I'm not allowed to, like, sing my truth. I'm not allowed to be more emo. Why are you putting, like, why am I, like, you, when it's that first feeling of, like, oh, shoot, I'm in a box. Oh, shoot.
So you never blamed it on the label situation?
Nah, I just kind of blame it on, like, just people and perceptions. And luckily, the album took off in some markets, thank God. It, like, really took off, established
your worldwide market.
Me and other markets, yeah.
Tech,
like, I think the song was number one in Canada and, like, Germany and some other places. And I really felt the love on many levels, so it was okay. But yeah, in the U.S., I was kind of like, oh, well, I guess nobody wants to hear me singing about stuff I don't like and biting the hand that feeds me.
We are so picky, aren't we? America, it's just weird.
So, I never really thought it was about the label folding.
Really?
But maybe I was wrong. Maybe wrong.
But I mean, it helps. It helps
Try
to have.
Try was a really good song. Try could have maybe been on the radio. I don't know.
But it helps to have.
I don't know.
Your label intact during the 6 or 7 month lifespan.
Yeah, it would have helped a bit. Yeah, probably.
Because the same happened with Common.
Yeah,
like Common released Electric Circus. And then the transition happened.
Why'd you get that face for?
Oh, because I was sitting here thinking Electric Circus. That might have been actually when Nelly thought about, like, Folklore was maybe a little bit of a
It went through the same thing. She released it, and then DreamWorks sort of imploded.
This was all happening simultaneously.
Yeah, but it's still a different project. So it's kind of like, you'll never really feel like you know if it was a lefty type project and...
You bring up an important point because I think it's perception too. So you as an artist, you start to believe the hype of like, that album wasn't as commercial. And then you forget that, wait a minute.
The label died.
The label died. I got other people to blame.
Well, because
then people will say the same thing about Electric Circus. They won't remember that the label folded. They'll be like, oh, Electric
Circus.
That was just
a weird album.
But it wasn't right because it was kind of like.
It still had life in it.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I loved it. I mean, but again, if for Common Core fans, it might have.
But then if Whoa Nelly never blew up, they could have been like, Whoa Nelly, her debut was a little bit weird, so it never connected. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
It's weird how that works.
But his second album.
Yeah, shit is always weird when it don't sell. that's you know, you always get the weird title, you know, when it don't sell.
Yeah, people kind of make
it was
up
a weird
stories.
Record. No, it wasn't weird. That shit
but the thing was, I think the charm of Whoa Nelly was the weirdness of it. It was a weird record. This one was more focused and.
Yeah, it had more of a concept.
Straight ahead. Which really. Leads to
it was like an exploration of identity, really.
But that leads to when Loose came out,
pay dirt.
But at the time, here's
told
the thing,
you motherfuckers.
Pay dirt, yeah. totally had something to prove. Though.
My introduction to Loose though was when you did SNL, and
oh shit.
Right. And
in like a bra.
It was like, bra?
Oh, snap. Google. Seriously?
But the funny thing is, I always showed my midriff on tour. You remember?
I know, but.
You don't remember me coming out with Moby with like a bikini top on? You were and singing hippie. Southside?
You were like hippie Nelly. Like, that's what I was used to. I've seen your feet more
version.
Than I've seen it in shoes. So, what was. Okay. Did you
what
feel?
Do you see? I never seen your feet in high heels. I saw them in sneakers. Yeah.
Yeah. Or sometimes you just walk around with your bare feet backstage. But with Loose, Was it just all systems go and let me just...
I'm looking at the picture.
You're literally looking at the picture.
I had to. You said
it. You have the internet.
Nelly Furtado in a bra. You
got to
look.
Let me see that.
That's what you typed?
No, I didn't.
That was a Google.
Nelly Furtado on SNL.
Okay. Oh my God, that's so funny. No, that's but you're right. It's a far cry from like... my like moon boots and crazy like raver pants the first time I did SNL. Right. Well, so not, so Laia, you're
mentioned,
right.
Laia mentioned mm-hmm. that you did work on the Get Your Freak On remix.
Yeah, which but that was a full tomboy. Like
No, but that was that was a crucial summit meeting between you and the Timbaland group.
It was. And everybody forgot about it because they were like, how'd you meet Timbaland? But
there was actually,
we didn't forget about it.
There was actually, you guys worked together
well,
before that.
Well, not the hip hop people.
Well, not the black people. Yeah.
They know what's going on.
Yeah. You worked with Timbaland before that remix though, right? You did a remix?
Okay, you did a remix so of...
We did three things before Loose. Like, we did things like 5 years before
Loose. Was like a Turn
Loose.
On the Radio and...
Turn Off the Light remix.
Turn Off the Light remix.
We toured together.
With Scott Storch.
On that tour, yeah. We toured together. Okay. He came on the road with Miss Jade for at least 6 or 7 shows.
Miss Jade, I forgot about Miss Jade.
Where is she? Because I was on Ching Ching, the other song with Miss Jade.
I forgot about that one.
And then the Missy Elliott remix.
I love that record.
Yeah.
Oh, Jade. I'm sorry.
So Jimmy Iovine actually told me to go work with Timbaland again. And he's like...
Of course. Why didn't I think of that?
Yeah. He was like, you know, you guys made a promise with the work you've done together and you haven't fulfilled on it. I think you should go to Miami. Timbaland's in a really great creative space right now. And I was like, sure. At that point, I had already worked with Pharrell, Scott Storch, Nelly Hooper in England.
Wow.
I was just like enjoying my record contract flying around with my daughter, like recording with people. So I was like, okay, sure. And so, because she's a toddler, she's not in school yet or anything. So I'm just having fun. So we flew to Miami, worked with Tim. First day, speaker caught fire, straight up. We did Maneater and the speaker caught fire.
Really?
Yes.
That's got to be a good sign, yeah. Right? I mean, it's got to be.
Yeah. Well,
it sounds bad,
beat
but it's
got Beat
be
It speakers good. Caught on fire when Eddie Van Halen did his solo. And yeah, notable hits have had burning speakers.
Michael Jackson's hair actually lit on fire during a Pepsi commercial once. Because the commercial was so hot. And
Cameron was actually covered by fire on the Confessions of Fire LP. In overalls with no shirt on.
Is this
a
black man thinking meme episode? Yes.
Is it everyone?
So Maneater was the first song you guys worked on?
Yes.
What is the process?
Oh, or was it Glow? You know when you like got your A game on and you're like, I'm going to pull out all the tricks in this first session, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm gonna knock his socks off, Timberland. And so, Timberland.
Land.
Yeah, so I was all like, like doing crazy stuff with my vocals, like in this song Glow that's on the record.
Right.
And then we did Maneater that same day. Yeah.
So what is he one of those? Is he one of those work from scratch producers, or is it like you
he's
like this work track?
From Dance
you like this
Move.
Scratch? You like this scratch?
Yeah. Work from Dance Move. So if he's dancing and he's hearing the beat, and his hand wants to do something different, like the body's missing something, he'll add a sound so that he can complete that physical connection with
so
the song.
So he'll dance first, I mean, and then
it's
figure out what
it's
the...
It's all vibe. Yeah. It's all vibe.
Motion like creates emotion.
He's, I don't know, he's just powerful. He has this, the connection, I don't know. It's neat. And him and I, we're weird. Like when we get together, we hardly see each other. I just saw him because he invited me to come like meet some kids he was mentoring on a show called The Pop Game for HLN or something. Mm-hmm. I hope that's a network, but.
It is a news network.
When we get together, we talk like old people. Like we totally talk about life, death, love, marriage, divorce. We talk about big things. There's no small talk with Timbaland. Timbaland doesn't do small talk. And right?
He doesn't. I know that for a fact.
Yeah, no, Tim doesn't do small talk. So it's the same approach to music. There's no small talk. It's either good or it's over and I don't care. You know what I mean? It's either popping, it's either I'm moving and I'm loving it, or I lost interest, you know? So you're constantly trying to get his interest back when you're writing. So it's like, all right, you feel like you're like at the World Series. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you gotta like, you know, you gotta knock it out of the park.
But if you're building a song from scratch.
Yeah.
Which I imagine
he came up with the cadence, the flow for Maneater. He was like,
I was about to say, did he mention Guns N' Roses at all? Like, was Welcome to the Jungle?
And then I wrote the hook, and then he wrote the cadence for that, and then I wrote the lyrics.
Okay.
And then we had an amazing vocal producer named Jim Beans in there, and he was just coming up with really cool, like, harmonies and things. Like, Say It Right, half the reason it's cool is because there's all those little, from my body, I can show you, you know, like all those little, like, call and responses.
Right.
That's what I think takes it to the next level. We were watching a Pink Floyd movie that day when we did Say It Right. I put an alien effect on my voice to inspire myself, and then just kind of like, you know, just started singing that. And then, yeah, him and I just kind of just like ping pong, you know?
In that type
But Nate Dangerhands was in that session, like Nate Hills, who's an incredible programmer and producer.
Yes, he is. So,
and that was early days when they had just started working together. This is before, right before they did Justin Timberlake's album. Okay. We had finished our album.
So, okay, well, in that type of collaboration process, where it's you and him alone working and with Danger as well, and you're kind of building this Jenga game piece. Has there ever been a time where you build something and the idea doesn't work? Like, how do you distinguish? Or is it just everything you work on adjusted
until it works?
Until it works. Because usually, like, in a band scenario, like, if me and the guys are playing a groove and maybe it gets stale after 45 minutes, or I could clearly see that the client isn't feeling this, then I'll just throw it away and then we'll start all over again. But because of the intricacy of Timberland's production, you know, does every song have to be
Take No Prisoners? Like,
yeah, does it have to be finished to completion, or do you have like five songs that we worked on that didn't make the record and, you know, is just sitting in the
Him and I had a really cool experience with Loose, because every single song we made was on the album.
That's what I wanted to know.
Everything made it. It was nothing left over.
Okay. There were two things that didn't end up getting completed. One was a song I started with Justin Timberlake, and it was called Crowd Control. But that was late in the game because I was almost done. Mm-hmm. And then there was like a song that, some other weird song. I just remember it feeling like a Shakira song. I don't remember what it was, but it was like, it just had that feel, but we never finished it. And then it just fell to the wayside, you know? But it was very potent, our time together in that particular wave. And we just finished all the songs all in the same section of time.
Now, did you feel nervous in...
It's like we couldn't make a bad song at that time or something. It was weird.
I mean, yeah, it's easy to be in the zone. And at the time, I felt like...
Oh, and like Kismet too, you know, because like Chris Martin from Coldplay was in town. Mm-hmm. So we invited him. I knew him. Timbaland did not know him, but admired him and was on a big Coldplay wave at the time. I invited Chris in and he wrote the hook, All Good Things Come to an End, which ended up being a huge hit around the world.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
So things like that happened too. Like, it was just a wave. It was just a moment.
Were you at all worried about, not the label, but in terms of your original? Everyone has their original. Or in my case, it's almost like the barbershop theory. You know, I don't know if you ever have your barbershop thoughts. Like, Tariq has barbershop thoughts. This verse, I got to face the dudes in the barbershop when I do this verse. Which is like...
Yeah.
His soundboard, which could be an okay thing and sometimes can also be a handicap. Mm. And I see it more as a handicap than anything.
Why is it a handicap for you?
Well, I see it because it's a handicap because if your initial, say if her crew of six has those thoughts about, if that's echoing in her head, like, yo, don't make shit on the radio or keep it real or what, you know, whatever. Music fans be like, you know, the side eye ready for you. Are you thinking, yo, what is my original crew back at home going to think when I drop this record with Timberland, which has the potential to sell gajillions, which it did. I mean, but it's also a risk because it's such a 180 from how you started. Mm-hmm. Like, were you worried at all?
I was really just kind of, with Loose, I just kind of, well, two things. I came up with the title Loose about 2 years before I got in a studio with Timbaland. I wanted to make a more broad project because I found that my early material didn't translate well to larger arena festival shows because of the sounds. So I really dreamed of playing arenas with a broader sounding album. So I wanted to also prove to myself that I can make a big shiny pop album like any other pop star. And I just set myself to that challenge because I'm real challenge motivated. Mm-hmm. So I just set that goal for myself. I was like, I want to make something huge.
I admire that shit because...
to see if I can do it, you know?
I admire it because I know that most people, especially that are hip-hop based, are so, again, so at least my generation was so keep it real and anti-pop that...
Well, then I knew I could do it in a way that I still loved.
Right, but I'm saying that I think it's actually... I think pop is noble, which I know it's weird to say. I'm not saying that, you know, I'm the world's biggest Taylor Swift fan, but I kind of...
You're not?
I respect her steez.
Yeah, it's like kind of like a 50 million Elvis fans can't be wrong kind of thing.
Well, not even that. Not even that. Not even that. It's just that I feel like with pop music,
it's hard to write a song that millions and millions and millions of people all feel is great.
At the same time.
I think it's harder to... Like, okay, some of the producers that we've interviewed on the show have made some of their best work with limited materials.
Right. Oh, hell yeah.
And then, or even with like Prince or whatever. Like, when you have limited materials, you're at your most creative. But when you're given the world, then suddenly, like, results are iffy at best. I think it's harder to write simple pop songs.
Like, I agree.
If, again, I always say, like, Phrenology's Water, like, 11 minutes, I had the whole diagram out. Okay, so minute number 7, we're going to go, you know, free jazz here, and then we're going to pan to left and right and do all this crazy shit.
Wow.
I could do shit like that in my sleep. I could never do a 3-minute pop.
No, it's like, all right, it's like you could just throw colors up against a canvas and call the shit abstract, but it's harder to draw a perfect circle. You know what I mean?
But isn't a lot of pop on by accident? No?
No, but there's the beauty and the simplicity.
There's a fucking...
It's all math.
I think it's hard as shit. Okay. It's hard to be disciplined. Math. It's hard to be disciplined. It's hard to bullseye something that can translate to millions instantly.
But I will say once you... Oh, yeah.
It's okay.
Oh, no, I was just saying, I do think once you find out what that formula is, it's easy to replicate it, though. Like, if you...
But the
hard thing is finding it. You know what I'm saying?
And caring about it, because you know it, but you just don't feel like doing it sometimes. Right,
yeah. That is true.
I think that's the misperception.
You know it because every time you always give us a girl record on a Roots album, we talk about like you. That's one.
But that's the thing though. I think the misperception, especially with the Roots, is that you guys are artists. You don't want to sell. You don't want to get played. You don't want to be on radio. That is wrong. Nobody signs a record. I don't know how to do it.
But you knew Water was not going to be a pop record. You understand what I'm saying?
Like, no, I know how to do what I do well.
Right.
Which is the opposite, but. Until I became a DJ in the last 5 years and really understand what people respond to, now I know what the answer is. I still don't know if I know how to execute it.
Say that before this new Roots album. Okay.
No, I don't know how to execute it, but I'm just saying that I know what the answer is now. Back then I thought, hey, just put a girl on the hook and it'll be a hit. No, man. There's so much more than that.
And then so much of it is imaging, I think, and like, lifestyle, because I mean, it's not really you selling the music, like you selling the lifestyle, you selling, you know, it's like some kind of cult of personality shit, you know what I mean? So it's like,
it's way different now, you gotta be a personality before you're even talented, so it's
because like I could make a Future record, but like I'm a dad of two, I mean, not the Future's not a dad, but like,
because he's a dad of six,
of six, yeah, I mean, it's like who's gonna believe that shit? It's like, nah, motherfucker. Like,
well, let me ask, because by that time you had a daughter. Like,
yeah, I did.
So does having kids change you?
Yeah, a few things. Like, I feel like, okay, so my inspiration for Loose was definitely like I looked to albums like Madonna, Ray of Light. Mm-hmm. Oh, right? It was pop, but it had so much artistry and direction, and it had a sheen and a kind of mystery too to it, I thought. And then Janet Jackson's album, when she came out as Janet, when she had the photo with someone holding her boobs from behind. I was so inspired by that album as a, I guess, 14, 15 year old. My friends and I, they called us the Janets. We all had very curly, long hair. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted Loose to be like my Janet album. I did. And it was. Nice. I was very
without
lucky
the orgasms.
That, yeah. But my version, right? Yeah. My vanilla version. And yeah, and so with Promiscuous, I had trepidations. I was like, wow, I've never sang a song like this before. But
well, I'll say you sold it well, because when I saw SNL, I was like, whoa, I hardly knew ye.
Yeah, you must have been like that, because you had known me like real early days, you know?
Yeah, and no, it's not even criticism. I was like, yeah. Oh, shit.
No,
I'm with this.
But no, it came from my heart, because I did grow up in R&B and hip-hop music. So for me, it was very natural to sing that way. It was very natural to sing that type of music. You know, it was in my heart. So I just, you know what I really think it is? I think my musical vocabulary is large. So that's why I don't fit into a box and every album's different, because I don't like to speak the language in different ways, the musical language, you know? When you grow up playing instruments, you play the black notes on a page. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no genre, you know? It should be a democratic thing, I think, music, you know?
Do you feel freedom in that? Because, you know, a lot of artists don't really have that at the end. Like, some people would want to do other things, but I feel like with you, you can do so many things because you're not in a box. But do you feel that privilege in that way?
I guess so, because I don't know how to do it any other way. Like, I don't know how to adhere to a genre. I don't know what that is. Like, I don't know what that is. You know what I mean? Or if I did know, I would get bored after doing it once. I get so bored. I get bored. That's all it is. I just very curious person. I'm just led by my curiosity. And if I can be interested in something, then I'll do it, you know? But if I have no interest, I just can't. I just can't do it.
Well, the success of Loose was really unprecedented. Like, did you expect, especially coming off of Folklore, was it just like, let me throw the spaghetti on the wall and see what happens?
We had nothing to lose.
Yeah, but then suddenly it's like, I mean, 12 million is nothing to scoff at.
Yeah, it was crazy.
So at the height of the madness of you surpassing even your debut record, I mean, what was it like suddenly? Like, especially with you having to be an artist, having to be a mommy, having to be a songwriter, like wearing all these hats. Where does that, you know, what does 10 million feel like at the height of the madness?
It was exhausting. I was so tired because I was traveling with my daughter around the world.
For 2 years, right? 2 years?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, I toured, like, I was making the record. When I made Loose, she was almost two. Mm-hmm.
Who were you on tour with at the time? Or who were you touring with?
Well, okay, so I made the record. Yeah. Then it was like, I guess she was three when I brought her on the road. Because by the time we went on the road, I was just like three. 3 years, 4 years old. Anyway, so I was really tired. I was on the road. It was amazing because I got to play these arena shows I had dreamed of, right? Mm-hmm. It was like, ooh, these songs sound great in an arena. This is cool. And then I'll fit in all the old songs too. And it was like really fun. But yeah, it's a lot of pressure because this is what I will tell you. And I sympathize when I see pop stars with these huge careers because I know what they're really thinking. And what they're really thinking is, wow, I had two number ones. Why was my third single not number one? I feel like a failure. Whoa. I have an arena tour. Why isn't Hamburg sold out?
Ooh.
I have a sold out arena tour. Why didn't we sell out Hamburg and Munich?
So you're one of the people that if 100 people love, if 99 people in the room love you, you only care about the one that's like indifferent.
It's the nature of the business because all business models are based on growth and expansion.
I think that's human nature though.
Yeah. So that's the problem with the music business is because you can never stay on top. So it's like you're on top and all you're worried about and every single person who's number one right now, all they're worried about is this album going to hit? Is this going to hit? Like, am I going to, like, that never goes away. Like, I was at a Sting concert in like somewhere strange, like Latvia. I ended up there because I had a show and he saw me as he going to his car and he goes, oh, thank God I didn't know you were here. I would have been so nervous. And I'm thinking, you're Sting. It's never good enough for these sensitive artists. If you're still that nerd who, like, nobody likes me.
You do.
It's so weird. Or you're worried that you don't have credibility. Or you're worried the peanut gallery doesn't like you anymore because you're so like, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's always somebody to prove something to. It's
That's
never
why I created
perfect.
This radio
there
show
is no yellow brick
for
road.
For these people to keep me in line.
Yeah. Yes.
No,
yes.
But
that's why.
But no. That happens a lot. Like, you'll find out that you do your best shows ever in obscure towns that you know industry people aren't watching you.
Totally.
Like, have you ever had a really, really good LA show or a really good New York show? Or Toronto.
A handful, you know.
British Columbia.
It's like,
with us, it's always fails.
No, I can remember maybe one, you know?
Yeah, it's always a fail. But yet, you know, Montana, best show ever. Because, yeah, I mean, there's no pressure of people watching you.
You know the people there are actually want to be there, and they're not just trying to be seen.
Wait,
that's the other thing when you have radio singles. You think people are just there to be cool, and they're just there because your thing is the cool thing to do that night. It's very different than when you have an album that's less successful and you know everybody who's there, they actually want to be there. Not because the radio had a commercial. Yeah, yeah. Your friend invited you. You like my outfit in the video. You know what I'm saying? This is real stuff. It's real stuff you think about.
So, okay, so how do you handle...
I know, you think I'm crazy, right?
I don't think
you're
crazy.
What is she talking about?
No, I'm thinking because I was on the other side of radio for the last 15 years.
Yeah.
So I'm just really thinking about it in an artist way. I never thought about that. Like,
it's true.
No, everything you're saying makes perfect sense.
Okay, cool. Okay.
I think you're crazy.
You do?
Steve, have you had your medicine yet?
I was trying to
come to my songwriting workshop. No, I'm kidding.
That would be good.
Steve, you would fit right in at the songwriting workshop.
I want to see one of these Montana Roots shows at some point.
So do I.
Fuck Those you, sound- Steve. Whatever.
Helena.
Anyway, no, so
oh
with
But that's so self-defeating. It's a horrible attitude to be like, they're only here because they're following a wave. You
but,
know?
That's,
like,
that's but that's so not mean. True. That's I don't so think that mean. Happens, though. You don't come out the house just because your outfit was cute in the video. You come out the house because at least I like one to two songs. Like,
no, that totally happens. It does.
It does.
It totally
And the
happens.
Thing is,
it's
okay.
It's kind of an obscure way to look at it, but
if your breakout, if your true breakout arena album is your third record, and you know you had some heat on the first, like how do you, if you have a lot of broth, and very little
chicken.
Yeah, meat. did you ever have moments where you're like,
that's amazing.
Okay, well,
a lot of
strange
analogies. Yeah,
food right analogies here, on this
right
show.
Right here. Right?
Broth sounds so good on the radio. Broth.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that if you're there because you know a particular fan is really there for permit, like, oh, they're going to come in live when I start. Promiscuous or whatever.
Yeah.
Then it's like, how do you pace your show then? Like, okay, well,
you want to get the diehards and the new.
Oh, it's
fans.
Hard. You know what I used to do on the Looster? I'd play Party's Just Begun, this track from my first album. It's like, Party's Just Begun. And I'd do this whole, like, you know, yeah, like this, like, I do this whole like vocal percussion thing. And that kind of got my jollies off in that song. Like, I was like, okay, I'm being artistic in this song. And any of my old fans might know this one. And I enjoyed I love playing that role. I love putting on a fancy ball gown and singing Showtime. Like, it was fun. But like, it was fun times. I enjoy it all. It's fun learning a new skill. Right. It's fun learning how to act on stage and do choreography. And that was cool. I liked it.
All right, y'all, you know what season it is. Tis the season for spring breaking and planning our summer travel. And if you're like me, you're already in your Airbnb app trying to find which spot is right for you. Now, listen, while I'm looking to spend all this money, what I'm not doing is thinking about making money with Airbnb. See, you got to change your mind state. Make the money while you're spending the money. How, you say, Laia, do I make the money? Well, you host at your house. And I know what you're thinking. I mean, my whole house? No, you don't have to do your whole house. I mean, you could do a room or, you know, do the whole house. So make some money while you're spending some money this summer. I'm trying to tell you, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Rain or shine, every day is a great day for fishing, right? You got rain gear, but you can't overlook sunny day gear. A Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite hoodie has you covered on the sunniest days. Like, literally. I mean, who wouldn't trade a sunburn for a trophy fish? But why do it if you don't have to? Especially when this Solar Stream Elite hoodie is built with broad-spectrum UV protection. We're talking UPF 50. And it has airflow so you don't overheat. And what's the alternative? Putting down the rod every half hour so you can slather on some sunscreen. Seems like an easy choice to me. Columbia PFG has you covered with their Castback TC shoe. Its OmniMax cushioning and traction system helps if you're on your feet a lot, say, fighting a fish. Not to mention keeping you sure-footed on a wet rocking boat. So if you're going to be spending long days out on the water, and I sincerely hope that you will be, head over to Columbia.com/PFG and shop all their performance fishing gear.
Wait a minute. Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Okay. I'm sorry. I just had a moment. I just had a moment that I totally forgot about. Okay. Ah, damn. I feel like I'm about to have a lie to you moment.
Okay, I'm ready.
Okay.
Uh-oh.
And I'm also going to mirror it up because I got to be sort of ambiguous with the question.
Uh-oh.
I love these.
Because I don't want to be...
He's still disclaiming.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of. Yeah, it's going to be more preface than it is.
Yeah, ask
questions.
The question. This, we understand. This is a safe
think
space.
Usher, think Usher. 90 minute show. Usher.
Okay, did you really hit TLC? No, I'm playing. That was an Usher question.
Oh, okay.
Anyway.
Oh, wow. Whoa.
Okay. I have a question about Give It to Me.
Okay, yeah.
Now, we know who Timberland was. Busting shots at
the purple guy for those.
No, that was Justin.
That was Justin. Yeah. Oh, and Timbaland in particular. Yeah. That was, with, that was a Scorch.
Right.
Scott Storch.
And we know that Justin was. But okay, you just laying all the tea.
Yeah,
out.
I mean, because people listen, they don't know all the.
Yeah,
so Give It to Me was Justin.
I know,
was
I just don't want to establish this show as a common denominator. All right.
But no,
it happened.
Know.
It happened
everybody
in the
knows.
Past.
Like, everybody knows
the,
it anyway.
The listener context. So Justin was talking shit about Prince. Timbaland was dissing Scott Storch.
Okay. I got a disclaimer.
Can I ask you, can
oh, wait,
I ask you a question?
A disclaimer.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
And we don't have to mention the name.
That's okay.
Oh, Fonte.
I'll do a disclaimer. No, my disclaimer is that, let me just say, it was like at the end of the movie, it's like the thoughts and feelings of the artist do not reflect the other artist. Because like we recorded the verses separately. I was there to help write the hook.
Right.
And I wrote my verse, but I was not present when Justin recorded his verse, and I was not present when Timbaland recorded his verse.
But wait, that's not my question.
That's not the question. Go
ahead. My question is, just yes or no.
Yeah.
Were you... bucking a shot at someone in your verse.
I was. Yeah.
Can you
okay,
play
okay.
it?
Okay. No. I'm not even going to go
can
there.
Can you just remind
I'm
us?
Also, here's
but
the thing,
though. I was egged on in the studio, and I won't name names. It wasn't necessarily Timbaland. Secondly, I was.
Here's the thing.
No, and secondly, I told her.
Here's the backstory.
Because we've made up since.
Thank you. That's what I wanted to know.
Yeah, no.
Because here's the thing.
But I was honest with her about it when she asked me about it.
I was hired.
Yeah.
I was hired by that person to do their birthday party.
Oh.
And I didn't know nothing about
Bill,
this shit.
You played Bill.
The record?
Who is it?
Oh, no.
Dude, not only did I play the record.
I don't know who it is. Who played it twice?
No.
He's giving us context clues.
Oh, my gosh.
Dog, this is like, how many years ago was it? Like, dog.
No statute of limitations. I'm establishing a precedence of this show.
That we don't.
That I'm not. No. Throwing people under the bus.
No, we're not throwing
people under the bus.
We're discussing history.
I will tell you off air.
Can we ask Nelly since they're the ones that were.
I'm sorry. This is where I got Questlove Supreme the moment. I got to set the precedent.
Supreme and Nelly, because she. They
anyway, I was hired by this particular person to do their birthday party.
Okay.
Not knowing the history of the song.
Ouch.
And this is just when the shit came out.
Woo.
So this was like.
It's hot.
Usually in my first five records. Two of those records are going to be the song of the moment. And I played this shit, and goddamn, the whole party just looked at me and ran up to me like, are you crazy? And I was like, huh? And then finally, the person came to me, and someone explained.
Oh, I got it.
Someone explained to me And then I just silently took the record off and put Billie Jean on.
We made up at Princess Diana's memorial show at Wembley Arena in London, England.
I'm glad.
Good place for that.
And it was a beautiful moment.
So I'm glad. Fonte hates me right now.
Yeah. I'm thinking about the listeners.
I don't recommend making a diss song ever. It's bad karma. Bad karma came back. Yeah. It's bad karma.
Prodigy.
Bad karma? Wait, what do you mean it came back?
Well, it was a number one song. So at first you're like, cool. You know?
Right.
And it was fine, you know, like the hook, you know, that's just like the little things we said in our verses. But like, we didn't need to do that. We could have probably done it without it being like that. Like, that was just a subplot. Like, you didn't even know about it when you played it at the show.
I didn't know shit. And I regret playing it ever since. I don't think I've touched it since.
Negativity is
the idea of you fading out real slowly.
Is never a good thing. It's really bad. But, you know, it was a good experience. It was a good experience. And I was, I guess, as honorable as one could be doing that type of thing. Like, she asked me about it to my face at an event. And I actually said, yes, it is, and this is why. And explained.
You're so polite, though. I want to know what
cash
a polite
me outside.
Confrontation.
How about that? This is why outside. I dissed you.
Yeah, that's I was real. About to say, that's awfully considerate of you. And
yeah, and she didn't agree, and she didn't agree with what I said.
What were the lyrics, if you don't?
No.
Yeah.
He won't play the song.
But it was fine. We kind of worked it out like ladies,
yes,
you know?
We worked it out.
It had a happy ending, so I think we can talk
about it. I think we can talk. It had a happy ending, and it's not still on.
I was in the wrong. Like,
wait,
I think,
time out. Have you ever publicly talked about this?
Not like really detailed. No, actually. Oh my God. You're
yeah.
Doing that
so
trick.
Quite
exclusive.
It's woman to woman, right?
Oh my God.
It's quite.
Ladies make.
I'm not going to be punked on my own show.
I'm not muscling. We're not muscling. We're talking about history. If I bring up the Holocaust, it ain't muscling.
It's only muscling.
Wait, are we about to have a fight over this?
No, wait, can I just say that
the womanly thing that was interesting is that you admitted that it was your fault.
I think so. There was no real reason for me to just go on the record and do that.
No. It's like it would only be mudslinging if she was
defending my creativity.
Exactly.
Really, is all it was. But it was like I was defending my creativity, or that's how I saw it. And I might have been wrong about the things I was kind of thought, like, the things that motivated it. And she kind of also like explained that, and it was still kind of heated at that moment. But we made up, which was so beautiful.
Chapter closed.
Yeah, we made up.
Let's move on.
But at least let the listeners know.
But if we can talk to Prodigy about the Jay-Z beef.
How about that?
All of it. Yeah, because the world knows there was a Prodigy Jay-Z beef.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I Googled Nelly Furtado beef, and her name came up immediately.
Let our listeners do that.
Well,
I never
went down beef lane again, you know?
That was the sole beef.
I learned my lesson.
You've been down beef lane.
I just want to talk about the Holocaust some more.
The Holocaust on Questlove Supreme.
Yo, why did we wind up?
That
was an
unnamed dictator who will remain nameless. Who had a little mustache.
Yeah.
We don't want to say his name because, you know, we don't want to ruffle any feathers or bring up, you know.
Ladies, Google it.
Did we really just compare that beef?
I'm taking my show back, damn it.
Take it back. Nelly, did this originate from you watching some old Wild Orchid videos?
Wow.
No.
Okay.
I liked Wild Orchid.
Can we stop?
So with, pretty.
Oh my God, I really regret asking this question.
All right, move on.
Please.
Hitler dissed us.
This is so funny.
Can we go to Me Plan, please?
Yes.
I feel like you're the most proudest of this record.
I love that record.
What brought it on?
Well, because it's hard to like sing like properly in another language. I mean, when I was little, I learned Portuguese first. Spanish came easily by like grade 9. I guess I was 14 when I started to learn Spanish. When I came out with Wo Nelly, this amazing artist from Colombia named Juanes invited me to sing on this song that became an international hit called Fotografía.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a big song. Big duet. And after that, I just kind of got embraced by like the Latin community. And so I decided to do a full album in Spanish. But I did it. It wasn't translations. It was like I had the opportunity to do like a translations album of Luz, but I wasn't feeling it. So I waited till I could do it right. I hooked up with a great co-writer named Alex Cuba, who's based in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And we started a Spanish album in the snow in Toronto. And it ended up way bigger than I ever thought because all these artists really just joined on to the, you know, onto the project, and I'd featured 7 or 8 really great collaborations. And
I was about to say, you work with my favorite, Salam.
Salam, I love Salam. Yeah,
Salam Remy worked
with. Do you guys ever get together here?
He's currently working on the Never Ending Roots album that, you know.
I didn't know that. He's on the project with you? That's so cool.
I love that guy. We've done about six songs together. I love him so much.
See, even like he embraced the opportunity to do Spanish records, you know? So we worked on that.
Why not Portuguese? Just curious, because that's your first.
I know. See, there's me again doing idiosyncratic weirdness.
Right, and I'm like, you...
Everybody asks me that. They're like, why not Portuguese? And I'm just like, I don't know. I like Latin pop.
Broader market too, you know.
And if I did Portuguese, it'd probably be more boutique-y, like fado music or something.
Right, because they don't get nominated for Latin Grammys. Is that in
They do, dude? Actually, okay. to right. make matters more confusing. So like Laura Pausini's Italian. She's won a Latin Grammy. Caetano Veloso's Brazilian. He's won a Latin Grammy. It's kind of broad, the whole genre. But like... Portuguese is Hispanic on the U.S. Census form. Very confusing.
Mm-hmm.
Very confusing. Very confusing. And so I decided to sing a Latin pop album, kind of like a very inspired by like rock and Espanol, stuff like that. You know, Julieta Venegas, she co-wrote a couple tracks. She's a Mexican artist. I had a rapper named Mala, La Mala Rodriguez. She's from Spain. I had like a proper Mexican ranchero singer, Alejandro Fernandez.
She covering all bases.
Concha Buica, flamenco.
Right. You covering all bases.
All the Latin.
I really went there with it. I had fun with it and I collaborated a lot. And honestly, the Latin world of music is far larger than I ever imagined. Mm-hmm. And it was welcoming. I felt a sense of community that I really, 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 really
I was about
needed.
To say, did you go to the Latin Grammys and like, how did you feel in that community?
Amazing.
Really?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I felt, I don't know. It was, I felt humbled by it too, right? Because yeah, here I am, this English singer, and then I decide to make a Spanish album and it gets embraced. So it was like, wow, I feel very lucky, but I also feel indebted to the artists I've collaborated with, like Juanes, right? It takes people to kind of bring you in, right? Like with any genre, right?
Yeah, you need somebody to vouch for you.
Yeah, you need all the cosigns.
Fonte's our voucher.
Sure.
Yes, indeed.
Fonte, he's like, right, not right now, motherfucker.
No, look, man. Yo, I ride
Say you like
for
my
the
new
squad,
album.
Man. Thank you. I ride for the squad. Say it. In good times and bad times.
Are you going to sing the song? Of course.
Josh Groban's on my Spanish album, so he was like, "I want to sing in Spanish," and I was like, "Great!" I sent him the song, and I invited him, and he said, "Oh, that would be a good opportunity," and he sang. So there was both of us like singing a Spanish song together, but.
Yo, forgive me for asking this question because I'm about to go listen to that album, but I haven't. Are there any like samba s bossa nova type influence?
I didn't really go in the samba.
No one
direction.
Can see your side eye as you ask that question.
It's not a side. It's my side.
I mean,
your single
girl.
Lady slow motion hair.
Yeah. Not really. The closest thing. There's a flamenco song. There's like a real like Salam did that track. That's my favorite. I think that's probably the best like track. It's called Fuerte, Strong. And Concha Buica is this amazing flamenco singer with this really throaty, powerful voice. She's amazing.
Wait, Salam also worked on the next joint too, Spirit Indestructible.
Salam and I did a song called Something, which features Nas.
Yeah.
And another track that Salam did on Spirit was, he did more than one that ended up on the record. He did some B-sides too.
And you worked, why
we
did you?
We wrote a lot together.
I gotta ask.
Rodney Jerkins?
Yeah.
Dark Child.
Dark Child, let me tell
Dark
you.
Child.
What was Dark Child working
amazing.
With?
Amazing. I'll tell you what he does. You want to know?
And how many Michael Jackson stories did you get to hear?
You want to know?
Yes.
This is what he's like when you write with him. So he'll sit behind the keyboard and he looks at you when he's writing. So he'll be like. Like, and he'll be really
You're
intense.
Facing him. He's like a doctor. Like
yeah, he's staring right therapist. In your eyes. And he's like, he's moving and he's looking in your eyes while he's writing. And I loved working with Rodney. Actually, Rodney's a very good vocal arranger. As we all know, he produced Say My Name. He produced The Boy Is Mine, like Hello. And it wasn't until I was in his studio, I walked around and I had this crazy moment where I realized he had produced all my favorite 90s R&B records. Mm-hmm. And that's why we did the song Big Hoops and we reference all my favorite 90s artists on that song because I don't know. I guess I was in that energy. It was the last record I made with Interscope. Mm-hmm. And I actually, I don't know, there was a bit of pressure to make something big and bouncy again because it was my next English project after Loose. But I was just having fun. Like, Rodney and I had a genuine connection. We had a genuine connection and vibe together. I did enjoy making that album as well.
Which leads us to The Ride. Now, the thing is, when I saw the cover, to The Ride, I was like, why did you drop your logo? Who designed your logo?
Actually,
I'm a font nerd, by the way, so.
I know. Do you know it's like a sacred geometry logo? And my friend from, it's called Create. It's like a media company out in Toronto. And they did, they did a new logo for me. And it's basically based on all this like mathematical equations of like space and angles and stuff like that. And I just really liked, I know, I get so bored.
But was
it
symbolic
to
drop your classic psychedelic logo?
I think so. I just got so sick of seeing that big old thing on every cover. Like, I was like, not again.
No, but it's like, I mean, it's rare.
I just looked like I had all the same album cover every time. Like, I was just like,
your hair changed a lot.
It's continuity, though.
Yeah. I know, but I'm independent now, so I don't care. And I'm just like, whatever.
Do that.
I know. It's just, I'm
horrible at marketing.
It's just so rare. As a lover of record collecting, it's so rare to find product with good, consistent logo with history.
Shoot.
Like Earth, Wind & Fire has
guilty.
Their consistent logo.
Chicago
has theirs. Wu-Tang has more of a logo than like fonts associated. I mean, the Roots have kept our boring.
Blue Note.
Helvetica.
American Typewriter.
Yeah, but if you saw a Roots album in any font other than what you're used to seeing?
Yeah. I didn't even realize until you said that,
yeah,
but I guess so.
Because
you don't like the Roots, Nelly.
I love them. But Nelly's album looks like, it reminds me of like those 80s albums. Everybody goes to that stage of like The Secret Life of Plants when you put the picture inside the block of color. And I lost everybody.
Color block? No.
Yeah, you were reaching.
Thank you for that comment.
Thank you. Everybody did a picture in a block of color.
Take anything.
We're going to edit that one out.
Are you serious?
This is edited.
Pre-edit.
Was that really a reach?
Yeah.
I don't know. I worked with my friend on it. I honestly just wanted to capture the energy of space of mind that I was in when I recorded it. And I did that photo shoot for internet stuff, and I ended up using it for the album cover because it was like snapshot of kind of the week I finished the album in Dallas, Texas, and the artwork features local Dallas artists and visual artists. The artwork on the front's by Samantha McCurdy. You can't see the whole thing, but you buy the vinyl. I should have brought you a vinyl.
Yeah, you should.
Why the hell did I not bring this vinyl to you? It's so cool. But you open it up, and it's just, it has a sense of community. Just, I met a lot of cool people in Dallas, and I ended up working on all these projects with them. The video directors from Dallas.
There's a good musical community down there. Did you shop?
Bobby Sparks Jr. You ever met him?
I've not met him.
Really talented keyboardist.
Okay.
Moo clavinet. He plays it all on my album.
There's a really cool, I don't know if you go to record stores a lot, but
I used to work at my friend's store in Toronto.
Okay.
A couple years ago.
After selling millions of records, she did.
I did, for fun. Yeah.
The key to, I forget this, the leader
Vinyl
of
Poly, IV.
the leader of Polyrhythmic Spree owns.
Polyphonic Spree.
Oh.
Owns like one of the coolest record stores, mom and pop spots in Dallas right now. It's escaping me.
Is it No Cliff?
That's a real funky neighborhood. Don't get me to quote it, but it's a really.
John Congleton produced all the records, Polyphonic Spree.
Yeah.
The guy who did my record.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm saying in that area of Dallas.
Yeah.
Like,
it's a vibe. It's like, you know what it is? It's like that whole like artists and then like the patrons of the arts, you know? And then there's this great divide. And I think it creates this wildness to like the left side, you know what I mean? Like it just creates this more, you got to be even weirder in Dallas to be weird, you know what I mean? Like so you gotta really
how's it feel to be on your own and truly independent though, without mm-hmm. label a label
Well, I really followed my heart. I really wanted to work with John Congleton, and Annie from St. Vincent introduced me to him.
Mm-hmm.
We clicked, and I just, in my heart, thought, I want to know what it's like to work with, like, an alternative producer. Like, I want to see what that's like. I want to see if I could do it. And when I met him, we started working, and Interscope, I was still with them, but I always kind of go off and do my own thing. I don't really tell them what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. But eventually I did, and it felt like they were kind of like, yeah, well, maybe we could do this or that or this. And I was like, no, I really want to finish this album with John Congleton. So I was able to get my album back from them.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. I own this album.
You can
do that now? I own the masters.
Wait, wait. Wait a minute.
Do that
greatest time out. Wait a minute. You had a conversation with them.
No, my manager helped me. Like, I had my
people help
me.
Well, not you, yeah, literally, but I'm just saying that they were willing to amicably part with you.
Yeah, they gave me my master. They gave me the, like, I got to keep the masters and of this new record, and it was a blessing because I was able to make this beautifully produced album essentially independently, you know, which is, you're not usually able to do that, you know, because John's a really in demand producer. So we took our time with it because we were both really busy. But yeah, man, you know, sometimes it's just time to move on.
You look really confused.
Wait,
right now.
Time out.
What a way to move on.
Need this. Yeah, That's the sound of my brain right now, which the only
reason... has to do more with relationships. Like, there's a lot of old relationships in the music business, like the people you don't see on TV.
I guess if you ask,
you know
you'll
what
receive.
I mean? Totally. And it's like, you know, like between business relationships, like sometimes like there's certain people who know how to get stuff done quickly. I was just lucky enough to be working with some of them at the time.
The only reason why I'm mind blown is because now that I think of it, I think I did the same thing.
Good. It happens sometimes.
Asked, oh, yeah.
With Jay.
For the Tiffany board, or was
well,
it?
No. Jay. I asked Jay, like, yo, take us with you to Def Jam. And he's like, oh, I don't want to get involved in Jimmy's business.
Yeah.
And I simply just asked him. But my selling point was, I was like, dude, you have 17 mega platinum artists on Interscope.
You're not going to miss us.
Yeah. I said, all we're doing is wasting your money. You won't miss us. And he sat and thought about it. He's like, okay, thanks. Mm-hmm. And that was it. And I got my freedom papers.
Well, because you were respectful. You know what I mean? And I think even when I presented what I was working on with John, I was respectful.
Did you get your masters?
But I'm just saying,
I wrote a handwritten note. You know what I mean?
If you sell 12 million units, I'd be...
Yeah.
I kind of want to make sure you're good to the last drop. Like,
that's true.
Okay. That's yeah. Like,
yeah,
it's like
always risk involved, I guess. But like, they still get the.
You're
still
at least
get all
Jordan
those other 45.
You got some Jordan 45 time left in you, so it's like that to me is an amazing. Like, I can't believe that happened.
Yeah, it's like a kind of like a little mini miracle, I guess. I felt very grateful, but then when I signed those documents, I said, "Wow, I signed this record contract in 1998 is a long time ago. Because I take too much time in between albums. So for me, signing a 6-album deal, like at that age, I never knew. You don't think, right? When you sign your first record contract, you're like, yeah, I get to make an album.
Right.
You read it. I was always smart about reading my paperwork. But at the same time, you're not really processing like how much time. You don't know that it's going to take that long to record 6 records, you know?
So what do you hope
to get out
of?
I don't know. You visualize and it happens. Something I wanted.
I mean, you kind of taken the dream. As far as an evolution's concerned, you made all types of records, done all types of collaborations and musical experiments. Like what? I never believe in happy. I believe in satisfied. So what?
Yeah.
When? At what point are you satisfied? Like, if you were to stop now, are you like, okay, you have a beautiful daughter. You pretty much lived the dream. Like,
yeah.
What is the satisfaction destination for you?
For me, if I had to stop today and was like, okay, I'm gonna quit now, I'm never gonna make music again, I might regret like never doing like a Portuguese language album, actually.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to put that on you.
Oh, no, but it's true. No, it's not you. So that could be cool at some point. But again, I won't know until I cross that bridge. But yeah, generally speaking, I just wanted this time out's been really cool. Like a week after I got out of my record contract, like I think a month later, I was rehearsing with Dev Hines because we were going to sing together at his charity show he did. Did you go to that at the Harlem Apollo? It was really cool. It was a fundraiser. And so I said to him, hey, Dev, you know, I'm not with my label anymore, so we could put out our new song on cassette. Like, and sell it at the merch table for charity. So that's the type of stuff you can never do if you're on a major label.
Who has a cassette player, though, Nelly?
I do.
Yeah, it's Bat.
Yeah, okay. Cassettes are Bat.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. You can go to Urban Outfitters right now and get a boombox.
Oh, okay. There we go. Urban Outfitters.
And also, I did an installation at Art Basel this year with my friend who's a photographer. So normally, like, you can't just do that stuff when you're signed to a contract. Sound art installation, songwriting, and you know what I'm saying? It's just a different flow in your brain, and it's really nice. I've been experimenting with that, so I'm gonna see where that takes me. You know, I don't really know. I just want us to keep asking questions. You know, I took a playwriting class last year at university, that was fun. So maybe writing arrangements or something for like a different type of like paradigm, maybe theatrical. I'm not sure.
See, I get the feeling that it, you know, the ongoing evolution will, you know, she'll probably be prime minister.
Well, I was going to ask you, Toronto, like musically, Toronto Thanks. Has been put on the map since you first stepped on the
it
scene.
Really has
How
been.
Do you?
I was
you
about
know?
To say, I feel like a 40 Drake collaborations coming up.
Yeah, Melanie Fiona.
40 is like so nice. I
Even
Cardinal
Fishiel was post
Nelly. Melanie Fiona. Yeah, you know, I feel cool because I watched the scene grow and. I stayed in that city. I've stayed in Toronto my whole life and career. Well, from age 18 out. But like, I've watched it grow. Urban scene's finally on the international map. I mean, we were just doing our thing for a long time.
Thanks to Fonte.
But I mean, I need to know, did Maestro, Maestro Fresh West Let Your Backbone Slide, was that a hit over here?
No.
Maestro Fresh wasn't
Let
a hit.
Let Your Backbone but we know, but, Slide.
Yeah, I know about Maestro.
Okay, because I wouldn't know because we played 30% CanCon in Canada growing up. So 30% of everything you see and listen to is Canadian.
It's CanCon. Did you say CanCon?
It's called CanCon. Yeah, it's a government rule.
Yeah.
So like, for me,
this before Clear Channel took us over in 97.
Yeah. So basically speaking, yeah, it's so nice to meet these new artists that are coming out and they have an appreciation for what happened in the past, but then they're moving things forward. So like, my favorite from Toronto is his name's River Tiber. And then he's featured on the Cajun Hada record.
He's on the, yep.
Yeah, man. And he's based in Toronto. New artist you got to look out for, Mustafa Ahmed. I've known him since he was 15. He sings. He's a spoken word poet. Really got to look out for him. He's making his, he's managed by Doc, actually. And he's making his for Old his Doc. Debut right now.
Okay.
Thanks, Nelly. I was literally going to ask you to put us on to some new Canadian acts.
Also, I really like Charlotte Day Wilson's EP. Have you heard it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't heard. I've
Same
heard
manager as River Tiber.
She's on Bad Bad Not Good's new album.
I
as
love
well.
Bad Bad Not
yeah,
Good.
She's dope.
They're really
Fontaine's
good.
Fontaine's
art. Encyclopedia?
That is a voucher.
Current
it's a voucher and an he's, encyclopedia.
I feel irrelevant.
Voucher.
His IQ is way. Way
I love
above
that.
Us.
You I know, love Fonte, all the new you know, stuff coming out.
Fonte's Drake's spirit animal.
Really? Yeah.
Drake is going on record to say that this man.
I wish everybody could see the look on Afonte's face.
Has
right
he now. Really?
He's like animal?
Yeah, yeah,
yes. He said that in he dedicated his he won a BMI award, I think, and he dedicated it to me.
Really?
He dedicated it to
That's
me.
Cool.
He dedicated it to me, Andre,
I love it.
And Kanye.
Wow.
And then they asked me what. I thought about it, and I was like, I think it's great, but I wish you would have dedicated time to do a verse for my album.
How about it?
And we haven't spoke since then. But I mean, but you know, love the brother. It's all good. You know,
can I get that gun sound effect real quick?
It is what it is.
Oh yeah, I have a soft shots fired. I have Nintendo.
It's soft because it's great.
Yeah, that's my
but,
shots
but
fired.
But we've done. We like we worked sound. early on in his career, and I mean, he's always.
I didn't
like,
know
so
you did.
Stuff.
I didn't know.
So yeah,
yeah.
So, I didn't find out till later that he was on the loose tour because he sang backgrounds for Socrates on a
Say
couple
what?
Shows.
What?
Yes.
Wow.
The Canadian
Socrates.
Tour.
He
yeah.
sang background.
Yeah,
yeah,
for Socrates.
He got to start somewhere.
He did
That's called starting on the bottom.
He did doubles.
Yeah, now he's here.
No, he did doubles for Socrates. Wow. Yeah. On like, I think 3 or 4 shows on our Canadian tour of Loose. Yeah. But I didn't know at the time. Like, I just found this out recently.
Wow.
Yeah. But everybody loves Drake. Everybody's so proud of him, right?
Right, y'all? She said everybody loves Drake.
I'm Canadian. Like it was,
right. No. It was time
for the CN Tower to be on the cover of an album. It's a beautiful building.
Well, Nelly, thank you very much for joining us today at the QLS Peanut Gallery. Give it up for Nelly.
Yeah, Peanut Gallery. Everybody needs the Peanut Gallery.
That new album.
Yes.
Get you grounded.
Please get the new album, Ride.
The Ride.
The Ride. I'm sorry.
You got to enjoy it or get off of it.
Yes. Damn. Enjoy the ride or get off the ride. Yes, damn. You're right, actually.
You've been thinking that all day, haven't you?
You got to enjoy or get off of it.
Anyway, we're getting off the ride. On behalf of Fontigolo and Sugar Steve and Boss Bill and Unpaid Bill and Laia, a.k.a. Margaret, a.k.a. Get Off It Ride. This is Questlove, Questlove Supreme. Thank you very much, Nelly. I appreciate it.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. This classic episode was produced by the team at Pandora.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.